All right, welcome to the PW Torch Livecast, delayed edition here on January 5th, 2018. I was in the middle of trying to survive the bomb cyclone last night in the Northeast, which was a lot of snow, a lot of ice, a lot of rain, and it prevented us from doing our livecast last night on Thursday night because I had no power. But we're back tonight. We're going to review Impact. I'm Mike McMahon with Andrew Socek, and we're going to take a look at the January 4th edition of Impact Wrestling. And we'll be back live on the 11th, assuming there's no other natural disaster that I have to deal with, Andrew.
Oh, man, I hope not. That sounds pretty painful out there.
Yeah, I don't know what a bomb cyclone is. I never heard that before. But you live in the Northeast. I mean, I know you guys are in the Midwest. You deal with snow. You deal with cold. I have never heard of a bomb cyclone. But when you hear those two words together, it's typically not a good thing. That's all I could think of yesterday when we were watching the news and there's a lot of snow and a lot of wind, and now there's a lot of ice because there's temperatures kind of in the negatives. So it hasn't been a fun couple of days, but we're still here. So,
yeah, well, it sounds like a professional wrestling move, the old bomb cyclone.
Yeah, that sounds like a good finishing move, actually.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea. Let's get right to it. I watched this show. We're taping this on Friday night, January 5th. 2018, and I watched the January 4th last night's episode of Impact this morning, and I gotta say, Andrew, it didn't really make me feel better about my last couple of days. We've been doing this lately, though. If you were to rate this show on a 1 to 10, where would this one fall for you?
So there's a couple of things here that really bothered me, so I really dislike this episode. I'm going to straight up 2. This was awful.
Yeah, I'm a little higher than you just because there were some things on here that I did like a lot. There was a lot of things on here that I didn't like at all. I'm going to go slightly below middle of the pack and give it like a 4.5.
Okay.
But there was – and this was stuff that they had built to, right? I mean, a lot of these matches they had built to for a while. They had advertised the championship match for a couple of weeks. They had advertised Dan Lambert against James Storm for a couple of weeks. They had advertised a tag title match for a couple of weeks. So this kind of felt like a show where they were building up to some things. You know, this kind of they didn't give it a theme, but it kind of felt like one of their pay-per-view themed impacts that they've been running over the last couple of years when they've cut back on pay-per-views. But there was a lot of things on here that I didn't really think delivered. And we can go through it segment by segment, but with the exception of probably the tag title match, there wasn't a lot on here that I was particularly a fan of.
That's the only thing I could even recommend anybody going out of their way to watch. I did the hits and misses for the Torch today, if you want to check that out. And I gave that a hit, and then just basically the guy on America's Top Team who always gets beaten up, he got beat up. That made me laugh, and that was it.
Yeah, that was I was reading your column actually earlier today, and let's start with the opening match. They had Taiji Ishimori beating Trevor Lee to become the new Impact X Division champion. I know you weren't high on this. I was a little higher on this than you only because I've been a fan of Ishimori. This wasn't totally devastating to me. It kind of depends on what they're going to do with Trevor Lee, because if this was them getting the X Division title off of Trevor Lee to do something else with him, as in maybe kind of put him in a higher spot on the card, maybe even get him ready or try to get him ready for middle to end of the year challenging for the world title, then I'm fine with it. I don't necessarily have a lot of confidence that that's where they're going. But, you know, even if it was just to kind of shake things up within the division and tell a different story, I'm a fan of Ishimori. I think he's done some good things since coming over, or not coming over permanently, but coming over as part of the talent exchange with Pro Wrestling NOAH. I'm okay with this, depending upon where they go. If this was done to kind of put Trevor Lee in the back seat, then I'm not a fan of it at all. But if this was done in an effort to feature him a little bit more, either at a higher level or more within the X division and tell a different story, I'm okay with it. The one thing that worries me, though, it did kind of seem like they were going into an Ishimori, Desmond, and Xavier story. They talked about how they were friends coming out of the Super X Cup. They had a little interaction backstage after the match. I just don't know where this leaves Trevor Lee. I kind of hope that this pushes him further up the card and gives him some new, some more television time and more feature time. But if that's not the case, then I don't think this was a positive move.
Yeah, I mean, if it does play out that way, then I guess in retrospect it will be okay. I just, you know, looking at it last night, I just didn't get there was any sense that people wanted to see Ishimori win the title. There was no real journey to this story. We don't know anything about him, even though he's been around for months. I know there's kind of some inherent difficulty because of the language barrier, so he's not going to come out and cut a 10-minute promo. WWE has struggled with that a bit with like Akira Tozawa, Hideo Itami, but they have you could do for sure do a sit-down interview, let us know who this guy is. And really play up, you know, what he is all about. And they just haven't completely done that. And the same goes with Trevor Lee, really. We still don't know much about him. I mean, he was the Carolina Caveman for the longest time. And then he has the Cult of Lee, which I complain about every week. We don't know what that means. So to me, it just fell flat. I like Lee, of course. But it just was another uneventful run with the title for him. And I could completely see him taking it back in a few weeks. And then just once again, it doesn't mean anything. And the other thing that bothered me was that this opened up the show, which I think if you want to make a statement that the X Division title means something, they should put it later in the show, hype a few videos, cut a few promos. They just got it out of the way. I just wasn't a fan of it. The match was fine. It wasn't one of a great match. Just to me, got the show off to not a great start.
That's one thing I do agree with you. They always position the X Division title as the opener, mm-hmm. and that's not doing it any favors. You know, I think it's open. Has it opened the last two pay-per-views? I think it may have. I know it. I'm pretty sure it opened Bound for Glory. I'd have to check.
Yeah, I think Slammiversary was later on in the card with Loki.
That was a 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just it always seems that they position it as an opener, and that's. That's no way to elevate the title. There's no way to elevate the guys that are involved there. I know, depending on who you talk to, people will say that, hey, that's the second best spot on the show. But, you know, I don't think you can continually treat it as an opener and have it be viewed as something anything larger than that, you know?
Right.
And I agree with you, too. If they just go back to putting the belt back on Lee in a couple of weeks, then really what is this accomplished? You know, probably not much. I do hope that this is just them getting the belt off of him to elevate him further up the card, maybe kind of give him the James Storm spot for a little bit now that he's leaving the company. Not in terms of him being a babyface, but giving him that spot on the card in an attempt to kind of push him up a little bit. But, you know, if that's not the case, then this is just them continuing to misuse and continuing to waste Trevor Lee, who we're obviously both very high on and don't think they're doing a very good job of utilizing and haven't really been for a while.
Yeah, and I'm just not an optimist when it comes to basically professional wrestling in general,
they haven't given us any reason to be optimistic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if we look back at Trevor Lee over the past, year and a half or however long he's been around, there's just, for me, no reason to believe like this is his sudden push. It could play out that way, of course. I mean, people get sudden pushes all the time, but I take the negative approach. That's just how I look at it. I would love to be wrong. I'd love to see him in the main event. And maybe Don Callis does have that in mind. So when this was shot, I don't know if Callis had any sort. I don't think he was involved in any way. So interested to see where this is headed. And like you said, this could play out for the best, but I'm very pessimistic at the moment.
After that, they went to a triple threat grand championship match. They were all over hyping about how this was the first time this was going to be a triple threat match for this title. They talked about how Falaba was, for whatever reason, a judge a couple of weeks ago, and now he's in a match. They never explained why an active competitor was a judge, and it never happened before. But, whatever. This match I thought was a total mess. It was they did the best. The three guys did the best they could with it, considering what they were working under. But judges and scoring with three guys, I thought this was confusing. I thought it was dumb. It just made no sense. I mean, I don't know. I was really frustrated by this match in particular because I thought this really kind of epitomized the dumb TNA booking. You know, even though the company's not TNA anymore, this would perfectly fit in with some of the dumb booking decisions TNA has made over the years.
Completely agree. It was just a silly kind of embarrassing train wreck that they had there. You can't position a division as kind of an MMA style rules and then just joke around like that. I mean, it just defeats the entire purpose of it. Just at this point, just kill the division if this is what it's going to be. It never made any sense why Fala Ba was in the match. He didn't win anything to earn entry. He never actually turned babyface. He was a heel. Just none of it makes any sense. It was frustrating, and it just makes everyone in the match look like a clown. I made a note also in the hits and misses. One of the good things here is that the Fala Ba is catching on with the crowd, which is kind of that's very interesting to see. What do you think? Does that have long-term potential, or is it just kind of this particular crowd that's into him?
It's kind of funny. I was going to ask you that. It seems like they're catching lightning in a bottle a little bit with him. Mm-hmm. I think there is something there, just because he is really unique. He has a lot of charisma, and there's no one that kind of has that super heavyweight look anymore. I mean, mm-hmm. there's a couple of guys in NXT, you know, Authors of Pain are big guys, but there's no one that has that kind of Yokozuna or Viscera type super heavyweight look or style to them in 2018. You know, not on a big stage anyway. You know, WWE doesn't really have any guys like that. And it's not that, you know, those guys are you know, the be all end all and they're so great, but we haven't seen a guy like that for a while. So I think that he's a guy with the charisma that he does have, and he seems to be catching on, like you said. I think you could do something with him. You know, I think especially in this match in the last couple of weeks where he's kind of been featured a little bit more, It stood out to me that, hey, you know, they might have something here with this guy if they position it the right way. Now, I don't like you said, I don't like the backstory. Why was he involved in the match? We don't know anything about him. You know, that's all stuff that they need to fix. But just looking at him individually and his character, I do kind of feel like they've got something there. How about you?
Yeah, I think we've both talked about it before that he just shouldn't have been booked as such a pushover before, because he never won in his matches, and for no reason the crowd started getting into him, which is interesting. I think he does have the potential to be like a Rikishi type act that I remember when he just like jumped onto Raw years ago out of nowhere, and fans bought into him right away. And so like you said, it might just be part of due to he looks like nobody else. But he does seem to have a bit of charisma that the crowd is into. Of course, this being Impact, I don't know if he'll be booked that strongly. I would like to see him beat up, you know, just a bunch of squash guys in the meantime.
Yeah.
Because the way they've inserted him into the show has been very, very strange. But I think with the right amount of with the right booking, which is, of course, a big if, I think, yeah, they do have something with him there. Not somebody to build the promotion around, but certainly somebody that could be an entertaining mid-carder. That could theoretically get the crowd going and sell some merchandise.
Yeah, you know, he's a guy, the look is what's big with me, just because, like you said, nobody looks like him now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's big. You know, you want guys to kind of differentiate themselves, and he doesn't look like anybody else on the roster. He also doesn't look like anybody on WWE's roster. I mean, his look, it's not that we've never seen it before. Like we said, you know, it's, you look at Yokozuna in the mid to late 90s, it's very similar. It's almost exactly the same. It's a borderline ripoff, I think, even straight down in the ring attire. But we haven't seen that in 20 years. So, mm-hmm. it's what's old is new again. It kind of feels like it's a little fresh. At least it's not the same old. You know, it's not it's not a smaller athletic guy with a beard who flies around and has a couple of tattoos. You know, it's not like that generic. He doesn't look like the generic wrestler in 2018.
I agree. Yeah. I think guys like that are just like important. You know, you're flipping channels and you see him in the ring facing somebody, it's going to catch your attention. WWE is more accepting of different body types, but like you said, there is absolutely nobody right now who looks like him. And I think that's definitely a plus for Impact at the moment.
Then they went to the career versus career match, James Storm against Dan Lambert. Dan Lambert defeated James Storm in about 4 minutes. He got a bunch of help from American Top Team. I didn't like a lot about this either. You know, first of all, if James Storm is going to be leaving the promotion, you want to utilize him to get something over on the way out. Okay, they utilized him to put heat on Dan Lambert and an American Top Team. I'm okay with that part of it. as ridiculous as that may sound. I'm okay with that part of it. I had some issues with the fact that it was, for a guy that's been around since the beginning, they did it at the 9 o'clock hour. There was really no fanfare around him leaving. You know, this was actually him leaving the company. And to me, what it felt like was just an angle where somebody leaves the company where in 4 weeks they're going to come back again. And that's not the case here. So I can understand not necessarily closing the show with it because you don't want to close the show on a down note like that. But it just, I don't know, for something that should have been a big moment, it kind of felt like it was lost in the shuffle a little bit. And I don't really think that they did enough to play up just how important he's been to the company for the last 15 years. You know, it was just kind of like, hey, he lost, he's done. They showed him on the phone talking to his family, and that was it. And now we're never going to see James Storm again. That part of it felt a little weird to me. It almost kind of felt like they were writing him off a little too quickly.
Oh, completely agree. I strongly disliked everything about this. Yeah, he's been around for, like he said, day one. Of course, I mean, he left for a little bit to go to NXT, but otherwise, it's been him and Abyss. And I mean, think of WWE characters who have been around for 15 years. You know, if they leave, they're going to build them up a bit. Well, actually, maybe that's not true because Mark Henry left and nothing came out of it. But it should be a big moment. He's been, like they, I think Jeremy Borash said, he's been the best tag wrestler they've ever had. He's always been, near the top as one of the most popular baby faces. And I think you did a great job saying it there, that it did not feel like he was actually gone. It felt like an angle. And I would argue that if he is leaving for real, you want to give that heat to somebody who's going to be around.
I would agree there. Yeah. I don't mind them putting the heat on American Top Team if American Top Team is sticking around. And we don't know that's going to be the case.
Yeah. Like if they had these guys locked in for it, I mean, even one more year, I'd completely be fine with it. But it sounds like Lashley may be on his way out, which leaves Dan Lambert up in the air. So honestly, I don't even know who you would pick for that role. You'd have to go back and rebook some guys over the past few months because KM, it wouldn't feel right. Trevor Lee, it wouldn't have felt right. So they would have had to be more careful in their approach. But yeah, they went with America's Top Team and it was just – it felt rushed. It felt silly. Why would James Storm have put his career on the line for this? Why was he so stupid that he didn't know they were going to cheat?
Yeah.
Why would he make it a no-holds-barred match? Yeah, because exactly, that always backfires in wrestling. Yep. And what rubbed me the wrong way the most – well, a couple things. When he had his promo before the match, one, he talked about how he helps the guys in the back with their promos, which within the world of – wrestling, what does that even mean? And two, he talked about how he helps all these young guys and not a single one of them helped him as he got beat up for minutes.
Yeah,
it wasn't
exactly.
Just like, yeah, it wasn't a quick screw job. He didn't get punched with brass knucks from somebody running in. They went to town on him, beat him over the head with beer bottles, and not one wrestler helped him out. And then as soon as he got to the back, they all got around him and hugged him. He should have been pissed off,
yep,
punching these guys, yelling at them, why didn't you help me? I hate you all. I don't ever want to see you again. But no, it was all hugs. Just awful.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Yeah, you know, the other thing, too, and to kind of explain the difference, I think, in what we're talking about, how it felt like an angle and not something that was legitimate and real. I'm not saying they needed to go over the top and have a celebration like WWE did with Shawn Michaels or Ric Flair, but you look at how they handled those two departures and how they would handle the typical retirement stipulation storyline thing where you know the guy's going to come back. You know, that's the difference. Like, it didn't feel like it was legitimate and real, and it was, and it obviously is. You know, his contract's up. Right. He's not coming back. But I'm not saying that they needed to go over the top and have a half an hour James Storm celebration to close the show or anything like that, but I think they needed to do more to kind of let the audience know that, hey, this is legitimate. Hey, this is a big deal. hey, this guy has really meant a lot to this company, and not have it just be, here's James Storm hugging some guys in the back and on the phone, and I was going to walk off, you know, into the sunset down this dark hallway type of thing. It didn't feel like a proper send off for a guy who's meant a lot to this company. That's what kind of rubbed me the wrong way. It didn't feel like the send off was worthy of really what he's meant to them.
You know, I actually would have liked to have seen like a show closing next week, like a 5-10 minute promo from him thanking the fans, because you mentioned those Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels one. Like I remember in my mind watching those live. Those were great moments.
Yeah.
And TNA Impact, they don't have big moments. They only have a small handful, like, you know, Samoa Joe getting headbutting Kurt Angle, and a handful of those. But when people leave, they're just gone. Like Samoa Joe just disappeared from TV. AJ Styles pretty much just disappeared. Sting lost a match to Magnus and then just disappeared. Once you have those characters and you spend literally many, many, many hours of your life invested in them, and then they're gone, it's so weird. No other show, no other TV show would write out a character the way that professional wrestling does. So I would have liked to have seen more, for sure.
After that, they went to the bonus archive match. I believe this is sponsored by the Global Wrestling Network. It was Bully Ray and Joseph Park. I don't remember which pay-per-view this was on, but I know it was on a pay-per-view. And it was during the Hogan era, because they were using the four-sided ring. Do you know what pay-per-view this was on?
I don't remember either, actually.
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. But I know it was a Slammiversary. I just couldn't remember what year.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It looked like it must have been 2011, maybe? 2010? Something like that.
11 or 12, I would. 11 or 12? Yeah.
Whatever the case, they showed the match. Joseph Park beat Bully Ray. These matches, when they show these clips every week, and I think you mentioned this in your hits and misses column today, all it does is remind me how many more people used to care about this company.
Yeah.
Which is not a good thing. not when you don't have a whole lot of people that care now. All it does is remind you that, oh, there was a lot more people that used to watch this show. They used to be able to draw several thousands of people for live crowds, for pay-per-views, and now they're not. You know, that's all it reminds me of, and I don't think that's a good thing for anybody.
No, I mean, yeah, like WWE can go into their archives and show a WrestleMania Rewind and show you Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart in front of tens of thousands of people. But they also still do that every single week.
They're still drawing tens of thousands of people.
Yeah, whereas Impact, if you watch the show, the crowd is blacked out. There's not even 500 people there. The lighting is awful. It just makes me go, wow, Bully Ray, man, he was a great heel. Too bad they should have somebody like him right now, and they don't. Joseph Park, man, that act's been going on for 5 years.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's awful. And the thing is, it's not just like 30 seconds long either. These things run for a few minutes because they're obviously just eating up TV time because they didn't shoot enough footage or something. So it's just completely awful. I mean, I'm sure I could go on Daily Motion or YouTube and find that clip if I wanted to watch it, but I don't want to watch it because I don't even remember it. And why is this even a great moment? Bully Ray and Joseph Park. Very vague memories of it.
Well, it was done to set up the debut of Chandler Park. Chandler Park wrestled John Bolin. Joseph Park was in the corner of Chandler Park. And Chandler Park wins his match in about 2.5 minutes. I liked Ethan Page in his indie days. You know, I liked him a lot in Evolve. I don't like the idea of him being Chandler Park. I don't know why they couldn't just have him be Ethan Page. I guess, yeah, he kind of looks like Joseph Park. He can kind of fit the role, I guess. But this, I just don't see this character having a whole lot of legs. You know, I think you had a great point. We kind of already saw the Chandler Park story of, you know, the idiot that doesn't really know what he's doing with the Alley storyline over the last couple of years. So, I don't get it. I don't think this character has a lot of legs. I think he's much more useful and has much more potential if he's just himself rather than Chandler Park.
Another thing I strongly dislike. I mean, if you want to keep Joseph Park around, which is fine, keep, you know, you can put him in a tag team match, save Abyss some bumps on his very increasing bump card, or he doesn't have too many left. You can get just about anybody else to play that role. Don't get somebody who was popular on the indie scene and who could come in as a bigger role than playing a comedy act. And another thing is, like, I buy Joseph Park because I think it's Chris Park. I can't remember the guy who plays the name, but he's so good in the role that you believe that that character is real. I'm not buying the cousin right now in any way. He's just not that good in the role. He reminds me, I don't know if you've ever seen, it's called The Red Green Show. It's like a low budget Canadian show. There's like this character named Harold, and I just feel he's like doing a weird impression of that. It's not working. We've already seen, like you said, we've seen this act before. I hate it when people who aren't trained in wrestling beat actual wrestlers. It just makes a farce of the entire thing if people can come in and beat somebody who's been training. Don't like it at all.
What do you think of John Boland, who's essentially been an enhancement guy for them? I think they've used him on TV a couple of times, but he actually, I thought, looks pretty good and kind of looks vicious and has a mean streak to him. You know, they are obviously only utilizing him as an enhancement talent right now, but I kind of see a little something there, kind of like with Fala Ba. Like, hey, they might be able to do a little something with this guy. I don't know how old he is. He looks like he's a little older, but honestly, I think there's more potential in John Boland than there is the character Chandler Park. I think there's more potential in Ethan Page than John Boland, but if you're going to look at just the Chandler Park character, kind of felt to me that John Boland has a better look and more going on than Chandler Park does right now.
Oh yeah, completely agree. Yeah, I don't know why they're just making him out to be such a scrub. I mean, Impact has lacked like killers, you know, people that can just come in and just destroy somebody. I don't know, maybe not he's even that guy, but maybe take somebody like that and have him squash a bunch of jobbers and see if it gets over.
He looks believable. Like, if they were to put him in that position, he would look believable doing it.
Yeah, like just call in a guy from Canada, pay him $50 and have him lose in 20 seconds to that guy. Do it for a couple months and see if it works. If it doesn't, then just feed Boland to somebody else on the roster. But if it does, then you can build up bigger matches. But yeah, just having him job out to a comedy act doesn't do anybody any good, really.
After that, they went to what I thought was, quite frankly, one of the most embarrassing segments that this company has shown in, I'd say, a long time. This might be one of the top five most embarrassing things they've ever put on their TV, honestly. Eli Drake beat Alberto El Patron to retain the Impact Global Championship. This match was aired it was taped in Rahway, New Jersey at a WrestlePro show. It was clearly in a high school gym. It was clearly in a high school gym that wasn't full. Mm-hmm. They showed Eli Drake walking around, using quotation fingers, backstage, which was just walking the halls of a high school. You watched him walk by the restroom. I mean, that's literally
it's true.
That,
yeah,
the fact that you would willingly portray your world title match in that type of setting is unimaginable to me. I thought this was terrible. Take the match out of it. I thought the presentation that you would allow your world championship to be presented as being defended in such a low-budget, dingy type of way was a horrendous idea. I don't think that we're in disagreement, but am I way off here? Because I thought it was absolutely mind-bendingly stupid.
Yeah, the only thing that has made me sadder, I mean, I've seen stupider things, I guess. Like, if you want to go way back, oh, like to the Johnsons or some of those early days acts, Cheeks or something like that. But the company has never looked this low rent, and it honestly just like made me sad. I felt bad for these guys. I felt bad for the announcers having to play this up as an actual big match. This literally, it was not a half full high school gym, and they put this out on national TV.
And the thing is, they had both of these guys in their building a month ago.
Uh-huh.
Or 2 months ago when they were taping the show. Why not tape it in your own building?
I
don't get it.
No. And if they, okay, if they book this match with the thought that, hey, it's going to look pretty good, maybe they were promised there'd be enough cameras and the lighting would be okay. Once they got that footage, they should have come up with a different plan. They should have scrapped it. Hell, just thrown an old 10-minute match. I know I just complained about that, but yeah, anything would have been better than making your world champion and the other biggest star in the company, making them look just completely ridiculous.
Them look like they could not draw in a high school gym.
Yes.
That's literally what happened. The place was 70% full, it looked like, maybe.
Yeah, I've seen local wrestling from the Twin Cities. And those wrestlers go in high school gyms, which is fine. I mean, it's a local promotion. They've drawn more people than this promotion did with those two stars, and it was better lit too. So
yeah, and they're not booking themselves or presenting themselves as a worldwide promotion. I mean, look at the graphic at the beginning of the show. It's we're in China. I'm not sure if they're in China, but we're in India. We're in Canada. We're in the U.S. We're in Mexico. We're in the U.K. They show you that they're on TV all across the world. You're a worldwide promotion, and your world title match can't draw in a high school gym. I mean, that it just, like you said, sad. Sad is really the one word that I think best describes it. It was sad.
If Scott D'Amore approved this, I don't know who has final call. If he approved this, then I am very worried for this new era with Don Callis coming in. If it was Ed Nordholm, then, well, I also still question it. But whoever did was just out of their mind with this.
Yeah, I don't know. And I know that, okay, I think WrestlePro is one of their partners. I think that's where actually Falaba comes from. But like you said, okay, it's one thing to have talent sharing partners, but when you get that footage, someone in that office needs to be smart enough to say, we can't air this. Like, this just makes us look low budget. It makes us look low rent. It makes us look minor league. And they are minor league, you know? But don't admit to it. I mean, showing that footage to me was just basically like they're admitting to the world that, yeah, we're minor league. It's just sad. It was sad. It was sad. I didn't like anything about it.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to use hyperbole here, but like I agree with you. It's literally bottom five things I've probably ever seen, at least in terms of being sad, just awful looking.
Yep. I can't get over that. Then they went to the main event from there. LAX defeated OVE in about 10 minutes to retain – to win, become the new Impact Tag Team Champions. Retain it because they were the former champions, but LAX becomes the Tag Team Champions again. I thought this was the best thing on the show. Like we've said in the past, LAX is by far the coolest act in the company, and this was a good match. You know, I thought it was a good match. I thought it was the best match of the night. I thought that this was the best thing on the show in general. The crowd was into LAX. I thought that their win was good. It was a nice way to close the show. Almost kind of appropriate in a way. You know, even though neither one of us liked the send-off they gave James Storm, on a night, though, where they retire or say goodbye to, like you said, the best tag team wrestler in the history of their company, they kind of crowned the new tag team of the future in LAX, because if they can keep these guys together, even if the group disbands, if they can keep Ortiz and Santana together, there's a coolness factor there that I think people will be into, not only now, but in the future and down the road, because these guys have something. They're one of the few, maybe the only bright spot on the show right now, but I was a big fan of everything about this.
I was too. Yeah, I enjoyed the match. The feud is surprisingly clicking at the moment. I will have to point out that it's silly that the final push towards the match was Sami Callihan and Konnan. Sami Callihan beating the crap out of Konnan. Yeah. And then neither one of them showed up. That didn't make any sense. Did I miss something there? Was there any explanation?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yeah, Yeah, but so that was ridiculous. But man, yeah, the match was good. That diving cutter off the top rope was just excellently timed. It looked fantastic. And I could definitely, I know they're going to fight again, but I could use a few more matches before this gets played out, which I wouldn't have thought with an OVE feud just a couple months ago.
Yeah, you know, it's, I don't know who found Santana and Ortiz. I know they're Northeast-based guys. I think they're out of New York. I don't know if that was a Jeff Jarrett find. You know, very well could have been a Conan find, I guess. Mm-hmm. But they're really good as a team, I think they've teamed in the they've been teaming for a while, even before Impact. But they're an exciting team. You know, like you said, OVE. We haven't really been too high on OVE. I'm also looking forward to some more matches though with these guys. And quite frankly, we're going to get more because, as we pointed out, they're the only two teams in the company, realistically, right now. So it will – I'm excited, though, to see more of it because as much as – I haven't really been completely high on Sami Callihan's injection into OVE, but I thought over the last couple of weeks and kind of the build-up to this match that it has been pretty good. And I think that his involvement is of kind of being the leader, you know, him opposite Conan, I think they've played well off of each other. And the teams obviously have something cooking, and there's a chemistry there between those four guys in the ring.
Yeah, it's too bad. It almost feels like, actually, it does feel like these guys are on a completely different show than like all the garbage we saw before that. Because these guys are cool. They're having a good violent feud. The vignettes are cool. And then there's just so much weirdness and sloppiness in the other angles. I don't know if that's like perhaps due to Conan having a little bit of creative clout or, you know, just pushing things in the right way. But yeah, I'm liking these teams. I would take, I mean, just from an intrigue standpoint, I would take LAX probably over any team in WWE at the moment. Unless there's someone I'm not picturing. But yeah, these guys are clicking. But yeah, they badly need some more teams to feud with very soon.
Yeah, you know, I'd be interested in seeing them in WWE at some point. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but you know, you think of what LAX could do against the Usos, you know, for example. I think that would be a really good match, a really good feud. You know, they could do some stuff there, and who knows if they'll ever get that opportunity. I think if they keep doing what they're doing right now, eventually that will come. But yeah, they're by far my favorite thing in the company right now, those two guys. And in the whole group, but I think in particular the tag team, just what they're not totally innovative, you know, they're not exactly inventing new moves or anything like that, but they've got such good chemistry together as a team, and they found something there with OVE where they're bringing out a level of excitement where, like you said, it kind of feels like they're on a different show than everybody else. I was genuinely excited going into that match, and I'd be genuinely excited to see them wrestle again. And I'm not sure that there's anybody in the company right now, with the exception of LAX, where I would say that, you know, certainly nobody on the singles side with maybe Bobby Lashley or Trevor Lee, if they can heat one of them up. If they can heat Lashley up again, yeah. If they can get Trevor Lee to the point where we both think he should be, then yeah. But LAX right now, to me, is the number one thing going in the company.
Agreed. And to me, it's like LAX is in their own league. There's nobody else in the league below them. And then the league below that is, I don't know, like Eli Drake and OVE. And then the league below that is just random characters. Yeah. So yeah, they're just they're blowing everybody else away right now in terms of coolness. And this is what they need more of if they want to survive and thrive in 2018.
Well, you and I were talking about this before we went in the air, but Impact will tape more content next week. They're going to start on Wednesday the 10th down in Orlando, Florida. Scott D'Amore and Don Callis are in charge. It'll be their first taping that they run together. But it does seem like next week's show is at least one more episode from Ottawa, and maybe more, because as we've talked about this in the show, I believe, but there is a barbed wire match between these two teams coming up at some point, LAX and OVE, and it obviously was not last night, and it was taped as part of the Ottawa taping. So I don't know if that's next week. I would imagine they would build that, so I guess it's possible that we have two more Ottawa taping weeks before we get into the freshest set, which would be weird, though, because usually the week where they take new content, they usually do either a semi-live episode or they get an episode that they tape turned around pretty quickly. The only time I can really think of them not airing something the same week of a taping, airing new content the same week of a taping, would have been when they were in India. I think there was about a two-week gap between those, which would have been understandable because they were halfway around the world. But, yeah, this would be different for them to tape something this week and not have it air right away. That's been what they've been doing for the last couple of years.
Yeah. I'm done with this set of tapings. I mean, I do want to see that barbed wire match, but I'm very eager to see Don Callis come in to see if this it changes. I want to see some new faces. I want to see not so much ridiculous nonsense. I want to see if, you know, some, you know, like Trevor Lee gets a push again. So,
yeah,
hopefully they move things forward. This just popped in my brain as well. Was Laurel Van Ness, I don't think she was even mentioned on this episode, was she?
She had the one thing. So there was a backstage segment where Mackenzie Mitchell, I think, was interviewing Allie, and then Laurel Van Ness attacked Allie.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And that was it.
Yep. You're
that,
right.
In fact, that was the only mention, or the only time we saw any of the knockouts the entire night, I believe.
Yeah, which is just strange because they were in the main event of the previous show, so you would think they would want to capitalize on some of Van Ness's momentum or let her talk or something.
Yeah. There was no Johnny Impact on the show either, with the exception of a video package. They clearly still view him as a star. You and I think, both disagree, but they view him as a big star because they wanted to make sure, even though he wasn't on the show live in the sense that he was on camera, they definitely made a point to put him in a video package. But yeah, he's another one that I'm sure we'll see challenging near the top of the card. He'll probably get another title match again at some point, I would imagine. But I can't say I'm all that excited about that.
No, I mean, whatever they're paying him, just maybe when he's ready to go, give that money to LAX to try to lock them in and really build around them. Yeah, I mean, Johnny Nitro, Morrison, Mundo, he's fine. He's better as a heel, as we've talked about. But I'd worn out on him as a babyface. So I hope they have plans for him going forward that do not refer to Slamtown ever again.
Oh, Slamtown. Well, this was not, I think, the best start of 2018 for Impact. We've run through the show here. We'll continue to do it every Thursday night here in the PW Torch livecast, right when Impact goes off the air on Pop TV. But I think we're both hoping for some better things in the future, specifically, you know, when we get this first set of tapings to kind of see yet another new direction. I feel like all we talk about on this show is the new direction, because there's constantly new directions. I think we're both hoping that this is the last new direction for a while.
Absolutely. I've said it before, too. Like, 2016 for me was a lot of fun for the most part with Impact. 2017 was just a complete train wreck. Their worst, just awful. Maybe their worst year ever from an entertainment standpoint. 2018 is off to a terrible start, but with the changes coming up, it certainly can't get any worse, I would imagine.
I mean, quite frankly, I think it's amazing that they're still, you know, getting 250 to 300,000 people a week to watch the show. Considering what a mess it's been.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing that many this has got to be the bottom line. I mean, there's 250,000 people that are just diehards. They're going to watch a show no matter what, because it doesn't get much worse in their 2017, and people are still sticking around.
Yeah, and very surprisingly, this was their best most watched show in 4 months. And I thought coming back from 2 weeks off, it was going to take them a while to get back their momentum, but I guess people were interested in this show, which is almost a shame, because what they saw, I can't imagine too many people besides the diehards were thrilled with.
Yep, that's 309,000 total viewers on Pop TV. That's up from 285,000 viewers last week. So that 300,000 mark, or just below it, seems to be the baseline for them. You know, it doesn't seem like it's going to get much below that, because, like you said, 2017 was not great, and yet here they are still sticking around with that number. So if that's the baseline, at the end of the day, like, if that's the baseline for most small cable networks, 300,000 viewers guaranteed, 52 weeks a year, is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, for a network like Pop TV, I think it's fantastic. I think there's, and we've talked about it, I think they've re-upped with Pop for this year, but there's, I think, a lot of networks that would take 300,000 weekly viewers on any given, you know, for, not in any given week, but 52 weeks a year.
Yeah, it's surprising. I mean, 300,000 for in this modern era is pretty good for, you know, a half-hour show, but they're providing four half-hour shows back-to-back-to-back every week. So it's good, but for some reason, yeah, I mean, they just – it's still not financially feasible, it seems. So hopefully they can cut some costs and get more viewers, I guess.
I mean, I don't know what the cost is to produce some of these other shows, but I pulled it up here looking at some of the other primetime ratings, right? And I've never seen some of these shows, but there's obviously cost that goes into producing these shows. I wonder what it compares to Impact. But you look at a show like Ghost Wars on Sci-Fi last night did 338,000 viewers. Jay Leno's Garage did 389,000 viewers. You know, there's several that are in that 300 to 400 range. Mm-hmm. You know, ESPN Sports Center, granted, was at 2 a.m., did 306,000. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that are in kind of in that 300,000 range that you would think are probably more money to produce than a weekly or a typical episode of Impact Wrestling. Maybe I'm wrong, but it would kind of make sense that some of these smaller networks in particular would probably look at 300,000 viewers and be pretty pumped about that on a weekly basis. You know, some of these shows are obviously not bringing that in on a weekly basis. So, you know, I think 300,000 viewers on a weekly basis, a lot of networks would be pretty thrilled with that, I would think.
Yeah, which is interesting because, I mean, that seems like a decent number in this era, but they're not making any money with merchandise. When they do run shows, nobody comes out to see them. So, yeah, I guess these 250,000, 300,000 people that are still there must just be watching out of habit. Even when people call in, nobody defends the show. Nobody defends the booking decisions outside of people harassing us on our reviews. I don't know where I was going with that. It's such a weird state for them to be in.
Well, here's one just to bring up before we wrap up. We talked a lot about last year when we were looking at kind of some different networks they could go to, and one of the networks I kept bringing up was Fox Sports One. They had a history with Fox Sports in the past, and Fox Sports One was apparently trying to get, you know, different programming. I've got the numbers in front of me. It's the only reason why I bring it up. Last night, in the same time slot as Impact Wrestling, Fox Sports One had a Big Ten college basketball game that drew 395,000 viewers. And then their post-game show at 10 o'clock drew 267,000 viewers. I guarantee you that Fox Sports 1 is spending a whole hell of a lot more money to broadcast Big Ten basketball than they would be to broadcast Impact Wrestling. And the difference in viewership is not all that different. You know, that was... that college basketball game on Fox Sports 1 last night was 109th on the cable ratings. Impact was 140th, and the difference in viewership was about 80,000 viewers. But the difference in price for what they're paying per viewer for that college basketball game compared to what they'd be paying per viewer for Impact Wrestling, I would imagine is vastly different. It costs a lot of money to broadcast college basketball.
Oh yeah, for sure. That's an interesting stat right there. You got to hope that other networks are more willing to bring on another wrestling promotion. For some reason, it still has a bit of a stigma behind them. Unfortunately, even though it's definitely more mainstream than it has been in years. So better luck to them next time. Whoever is handling those negotiations now that Jarrett's out.
Absolutely. It's probably, I would imagine, people with an Anthem. Anyway, that will, I think, do it for this week's episode. You have anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
I don't think so. I think that's it. If you want to follow me on Twitter, Andrew Socek, S-O-U-C-E-K. Check out the hits and misses, where I pretty much just got angry and ranted for a bit. Otherwise, check out pwpodcast.com. We cover wrestling podcasts, so you can read them in a few minutes as opposed to listening for hours. Something to Wrestle is up. Killing the Town with Lance Storm and Cyrus is up. They interviewed Abyss. It's a pretty good read. Otherwise, yeah, new stuff always coming up at pwpodcast.com.
You can follow me on Twitter, at MikeMcMahonPW, and that'll pretty much do it for this week's edition of the PW Torch Livecast. So Andrew and I will hopefully, weather permitting, if we don't have another bomb cyclone here in the Boston area, Andrew and I will be back on Thursday night after Impact goes off the air. Until then, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week right here on the PW Torch Livecast.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.
Yeah.